Welcome. You're listening to Mark and Jackie's Wildlife and Photography Podcast. Explore and learn about the natural world and how to take pictures. This episode is all about wildlife and nature. Understanding the natural world is important. It's what makes life on this planet possible. Our podcast gives you insights into just how complicated and fascinating that world is. Episode 2, Badgers in Our Garden. Sunset in high summer here in the highlands of Scotland is around 10 p.m. The sun dipped below the mountains only a few moments ago. We're watching out of the window of our house, which is surrounded by woodland. As the gloom gathers, it gets darker and darker under the trees. Then we see a small white patch. It's what we've been waiting for. It's still deep in the gloom of the wood, a few feet from the edge, between the wood and our lawn. It's quite a small patch of white, with two black lines running from its nose to its ears, a long thin head close to the ground. It is, of course, a badger. Or more correctly, I suppose, a European badger. Its posh Latin name is Meles meles. It's the UK's largest mammalian land predator. It stopped between wood and grass, senses attuned, listening and sensing the air to make sure it's safe to leave the dark cover of the wood. Slowly, more of the head emerges. As more appears, you can see the ears and the stripe shape. This gives away the identity. Saba. That's this badger's name, meaning seven in Swahili, named after the 7 months of the year, the month she first became known to us. Badgers are widespread throughout the UK, but I bet most people won't have ever seen a live badger. They're nocturnal, and that is a great way to hide from us humans. We're lucky. The set Saba lives in is only a few hundred metres from our house. Most badgers measure between 75 and 100 centimetres nose to tail, and 25 to 30 centimetres at the shoulder, and they weigh 12 to 8 kilos. They have a white head with black stripes, or a black head with white stripes, depending on your point of view. Short legs, which are black, and the front paws come equipped with very long, sharp claws. The belly fur is also black. The rest of the badger, including its short tail, is covered in grey fur. Their diet is mainly earthworms and insects. They're omnivores, and although worms make up a large part of their diet, they'll also eat fruit. A small bird or mammal can also be on the menu. They have a wide dietary range, including protein and vegetation. Badger's home is a set. It's a series of underground tunnels that may be over 100 metres in length and may have been in existence and occupied by badgers for hundreds of years. This underground home includes sleeping chambers, birthing dens, even latrines. Badgers live in a colony or group of badgers occupying one set. This colony is called a clan. Many of the clan members will be related, and it is to the set they will return as it starts to get light, to sleep the daylight hours away. They'll emerge just before sunset from the tunnel complex and prepare for a night's exploring and feeding. The size of their home range varies depending on how much food is available. It can range anywhere from 15 to 180 hectares. As I've said before, the sets can be hundreds of years old, but there is always room for maintenance work to be carried out. And that's where the very powerful front legs and claws come in. They can shift literally hundreds of tons of earth and are always doing a little bit of maintenance here and there. It's a bit like DIY. One of the signs to look out for, if you find holes and you're wondering if it's a badger set, is look for piles of freshly dug earth. As I said, they're always doing some sort of maintenance, and freshly dug earth may indicate that a badger is in residence. Each night, badgers of the clan will go out looking for food. The powerful claws that they use for digging their sets are also put to good use for digging for insects and worms. And I must say, this year, it's been a particularly dry summer, and our grass resembles a battlefield, where it's been dug up for them trying to find food. They're looking for small grubs and insects and worms. But sometimes when you come down in the morning, it is a bit disappointing to see all the grass dug up, but hopefully they will have found food. They navigate their territory by way of well-defined narrow tracks and using their phenomenal sense of smell and hearing. Members of the same clan also leave scent markings to help other clan members know where they have visited. A badger's normal pace is either a walk, or if on a mission, a trot. A badger in a hurry moves up a gear and goes into canter. They may not be very tall, but they are very powerful and quite agile. If you put a fence in the way of a badger, it'll either try and climb over it, or it'll dig under it. One way or the other, there's not a lot of ways that you can defeat a badger. Meanwhile, Saba, who's made sure that the coast is clear, is now making her way down the slope in the grass. Our life with badgers all started just after we moved into this house. We didn't know we had badgers living so close, but we did put up some bird feeders, both ground and hanging. And it was one night, to our great delight, when we found a badger, attracted by the bird food, eating from the ground feeders. It was a very large badger, probably a boar, we think. And this one badger was joined by another and then another. As we got used to looking at them, we soon got to know individuals that visit us. For instance, we call Saba a she. We think she's a female, a sow, the term for a female badger, but we don't know for certain. After many thousands of hours watching badgers, it's still a guessing game as to whether it's a boy or a girl. Saba is one of the two cubs born last year. Juno is the other cub, and yes, Juno, because we first saw him in late June last year. Yes, we think Juno is a boy or a boar badger, but again, at best it's a guess. Saba and other members of the clan regularly come to our garden. The reason they do so is because of free food. We are careful about how much free food we put out. We feed different amounts at different times of year, and depending on the number of badgers we think are going to visit. We also spread the food all over the grass, so the badgers have to hunt for their food. We believe this is a more natural way to feed them than leaving it in large piles. We don't put out much food each night. Our aim is that the food we provide, especially in winter, will help the clan through the winter. What we don't want to do is to provide enough food that the clan couldn't survive if our supply was suddenly withdrawn. Saba is making short work of the peanuts and the special badger food. Speed is the essence if she's to get as much as possible. The short summer nights mean that other members of the clan will soon be here looking for food. She's not the first every night. Any member of the colony could be the first to get here. The only time we've known individual badgers to be the first to the food consistently is when they have an injury. Badge, the boar badger, and the badger we've been watching the longest, over 4 years now, got injured a couple of years ago. He was so bad that he could only hop on three legs. He couldn't put weight on his front left leg. His left ear had almost been torn off. We don't know what caused the injury to his leg or his left ear. He'd not been up for a couple of days when he suddenly appeared in this very, very sorry state. It was about this time that the breeding sow Padwan, who had been a regular visitor, also failed to appear. We've never seen her again. We don't know what happened to her. For 8 weeks, Badge was the first up, getting the biggest share of peanuts and badger food. In truth, he got even more than normal. We put more out to try and help him put on weight. It was late in the year when he got his injury, and we were afraid that he would not be able to put enough weight on to survive the winter. Badgers don't hibernate, you see. But what they do need is to put weight on before the onset of winter. They become less active in winter, although the nights are longer. But if it's frosty and or frozen ground, they can't dig or smell for worms. During periods of freezing weather, when the ground is too hard to dig and the worms and insects are driven deeper, they may not come out of their set to forage for 5 to 10 days. During those days, they're living off fat reserves that they've laid down in the late summer and early autumn. We have a soft spot for Saba. She was another injured badger. Last year, she too was only able to get about on 3 legs. She was only 6 months old at the time. We saw her one night with a very bad limp that reminded us so much of Badge. She disappeared for a number of weeks, much to our consternation. Then one night she came back to visit us. She limped, but it was so much better than when we'd last seen her. Over the next few weeks, she was first up, getting as much food as possible. She's now fully fit and just another member of the clan. A small black head appears from out of the wood. It's now a guessing game as to try and find out who it is. After a minute or so, we can finally identify who it is. It's Juno. He's come in to join his sister. Our clan, a rather grand statement, live just down the hill from our house. At present, we've got 8 individuals that regularly come in and visit us. 8 badgers is the biggest number of individuals we've ever had visiting. The boar, Badge, Saba, Juno, who are last year's cubs, 2 cubs from this year, plus another full-grown badger who appeared this year in March. The matriarch, Midsummer, is one of Padwan's cubs, and Tiny Tufts, who appeared 3 years ago in February. Very much worse the wear, it was a very bad winter that year. Yes, all the badgers that visitors are given names. It helps us to keep tab on who is about and when they visit. We keep records of the nightly visits. The reason I mentioned Tiny Tufts last is because she's just come into the garden. She's now looking for peanuts, although Juno and Saba probably have had most of them. Here in this part of Scotland, we're lucky. Badgers are pretty numerous. But in the past, badgers haven't been so lucky. These days, they're protected under law. But in the past, sport like badger baiting was carried out. This is where you put a dog and a badger together and see who's going to win. Although illegal for over 170 years, it still goes on to this day, with a dog and badger put in together to fight to the death. Badgers are persecuted because if they find an easy source of food, they're going to take it. So poultry, pets, and other small food items have always been taken by badgers. This puts them into conflict with humans. We also run over them with our motor cars. We've also killed badgers to try and stop the spread of bovine tuberculosis. When bovine tuberculosis was first discovered in badgers, the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries and Food began research into the best method to cull badgers. Used under licence for about 4 years, hydrogen cyanide gas was used, pumped down into their set to kill the badgers underground. The gassing stopped in the mid-80s because it was deemed to be so cruel. From the first, arguments for and against culling have raged, normally with farmers on one side and wildlife conservationists on the other. Hundreds of thousands of badgers have been killed over the years, and to date we've not found a way of stopping the spread of bovine tuberculosis in the national herd. I have to say that I was involved in the science used by MAF to form the culling strategy back in the 70s. I don't think it worked then, and I still don't think culling works now. But today, 40 years later, we're still slaughtering badgers. Now, as in the 70s, the effectiveness of culling is very doubtful. Many studies have concluded that it's not the answer to stop bovine tuberculosis in the national herd. But as usual, it's been easier to blame and slaughter wild animals than address the issues which may be unpalatable to some of the antagonists. Badgers do play a part in the spread, as does the undetected disease in cattle. My wish is that one day the culling will be stopped and we won't kill wild animals to try and bend the world to the way we want it to be. The other biggest killer of badgers are motorists. Our roads are littered with the carcasses of dead badgers. Badgers have been going about their business for hundreds of years. They don't know about roads. They'll just go across a road. Unfortunately, somebody travelling too fast will just knock a badger over. It doesn't stand a chance. Back in our garden, Tiny Tufts is looking hungry. Mind you, she always looks hungry, as most of the peanuts were gone before she got here. It's time to enter ninja stealth mode. You need to be a stealth ninja. Trying to open a door, leaning out, throwing a couple of handfuls of peanuts, and all without making a sound. It's a skill learned over many years of practice. But it's the only way to get more peanuts out. As the peanuts land, it sends Tiny Tufts into a feeding frenzy. She's always hungry. Just as the three protagonists are getting to the end of the second supply of peanuts, Badge makes his entrance. He seems to have a knack for coming in when there are no more peanuts available. The peanut-throwing ninja needs to strike again. Another mission to throw peanuts for Badge. At least it's summer and not a foot deep in snow and -5 and freezing cold. When this lot of peanuts have been devoured, we decide that enough is enough, and these four have had more than their fill. If we don't put out any more peanuts, they will soon get the message and move off to find other food. All except Tiny Tufts, who, despite my best efforts, seems to be able to hear the door opening from the other side of the county. She's only got to hear the click of the door, and she'll be back in the garden, looking to see if there are any more peanuts available. During the summer months, we only get to see a couple of visits like this per night. Longer evenings mean that the badgers pay us more visits during the evening, maybe one at a time. After a long working day, it would be nice just to sit and have a bit of a read. But no, every 15 minutes or so, another badger will appear, and so we get up and watch another returner, or someone we may not have seen for a day or so. During the short summer nights here in the Highlands, the first visitors will be in broad daylight. There's a need to get as much food as possible during these short hours. And if you're super quiet, you can stand on our back steps, 10 to 15 feet from 6 hungry wild badgers snuffling for peanuts. We are so lucky to have badgers in our garden. Other people may not be as lucky as we are, but I would urge you, if you're interested in wildlife, find somewhere where you can go and view badgers. There are loads of places all over the country. Type into Google, you'll find somewhere near you, I'm sure. If you decide to do it yourself and you know where there is a badger set, please be very, very careful. It is illegal to disturb badgers in their set, but not to watch them from a distance. So the advice is get there at least an hour before sunset. Set yourself up with a tree at your back, downwind from the set, and just sit and wait and watch. And hopefully the badgers will appear. After a while, they'll move off to go and forage. And when they do, it's then safe for you to get up and leave. Badgers are very, very easy to disturb. And it is also illegal to disturb a badger at its set. So if you are going to do it yourself, either get some expert advice or be extraordinarily careful what you do. Badgers are truly wonderful creatures, but their lifestyle means that most of us will never have seen one, except perhaps one by the side of the road. If you get an opportunity, take it. Watch badgers, they're fascinating creatures. Jackie and I have spent many thousands of hours watching badgers, and it never gets boring. There's always something new to learn, a new behaviour to see, or just to enjoy these wild animals in our back garden. There's one sad postscript that we need to add to this podcast. After we recorded the main body of the podcast, is that one of our badgers had gone missing. Midsummer hadn't been up for a few days. We didn't know why, and it was unusual. Normally one day she might be missing, but two or three was very unusual. And then we discovered her body on the side of the road near our house. She was killed by a car, by a motorist, and dumped and pushed into the side of the road. It's a sad end to a short life. She was a cub in June 2018. She's raised two sets of cubs. Hopefully they'll be with us for a while, Juno and Saba. You've been listening to a wildlife and photography podcast produced by M&J Bloomfield. For more information and details about us and our work, visit our website at mnjbloomfield.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again soon. Anishin, wishin' luck.